courtyard of the new Institute for Genomics Biology, next to Morrow Plots, just off the quad on the U of I campus. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, the same square with a new angle, now with shops, offices, activity, and dining facilities, including Milo's and Tang Dynasty. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, homemade pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, The Buzz Cafe, Prairie Fire Glass, and Any Frequency Music Store, all housed on the same street in downtown Monticello.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our number two of the show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls. Well, now, once a month on this show, for a very long time, we've been talking about food and cooking, and we always have a good time when we do that show with the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, who marched in this morning and reminded us all that he's been, one way or another, he has been associated with WILL doing things like kind of like this now for 30 years. And
on this very day.
On this, it was the 4th of July.
Yeah. And Charles Lindy called me at home and wanted to interview me as to what would you do, what do you do on the 4th of July? What are you preparing for? What are you doing and happening? And I didn't think about that when we set up the idea for the show, which was exactly that, a month ago. And all of a sudden I realized there's something happening here. it amuses me because it really wasn't until sort of day before yesterday I realized, wait a minute, this is the 30th anniversary.
So,
and we're still here,
amazingly enough, and a little bit off of our usual schedule here because the 4th is the first Wednesday, and we're going to take the day off, but we didn't want to go an entire month without seeing Doyle and doing this. So we said, well, why don't you just come in a couple of days early? So that's why it's only the 2nd, and it's a Monday.
And it's 11 o'clock.
And it's 11 o'clock, just to confuse people, just thoroughly confuse people. But it is the same kind of thing that we do when he is here on the first Wednesday. And the idea is that we pick some topic, and we exchange recipes and cooking tips and stories and always have a good time. So the show has a theme, sort of, but it's okay to depart from the theme, and this time around because we're coming up on the holiday, and for a lot of people, that's an occasion for celebration, usually some kind of outdoor picnic kind of thing.
Right.
And he's just said, well, for your 4th, are you going to have a picnic? Are you going to have a party for 4th of July? And he'd just like to know, well, what are you going to have? What are you going to have?
I'm sure things have changed in 30 years.
Probably. Well, I don't know. Yes, probably. Instead of just having hot dogs and hamburgers,
that was sort of it. Except, I recall in describing what was going to happen, there was a roast lamb involved at a pool party.
Mm-hmm.
They were in Champaign, and so everyone showed up over there, and we had big lamb that was roasted in the Greek style. Well, so you could imagine it was a Greek-inspired function.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But most generally, in those particular days, you didn't have much more than hamburgers. And at best, the hamburgers might be smashed out thin and put a layer of blue cheese in them and smash them back together. And that was about as exotic as anybody got in 1977.
Well, and now people are at least been acquainted with some of the taste and flavors of other places the world, other way of doing things. And so now, and was it a few years ago that salsa became the biggest selling condiment?
Oh, yes.
It was more salsa
than ketchup.
Than ketchup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of new traditions that I'm sure that people are going to be employing one way or the other. And so I was just sort of interested in, well, what do you do for 4th of July?
Okay. So your favorite could be favorite picnic foods, could be something cooked inside,
whatever.
It's completely wide open to whatever you would like to do. 333-9455, by the way, that's the number for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455.
Even if it's getting up and going to somebody else's house. I have a couple of invitations to do that.
All right.
So it can be any number of information. It's just a matter of, well, what are you going to do?
Right. Well, are you going to somebody else's house?
I'm going to go to Madison.
Oh, so you'll be over there.
I'll be over there.
We're hanging out with the Hoosiers.
Yep. That's what I'll be doing. However, I am going to make a dish. When you get over in Indiana, they call it a pitch-in, where everybody brings something.
Oh, potluck?
Well, we would call it potluck, yeah. But it's called a pitch-in.
Mm-hmm. All those Hoosiers, they have a different word.
Well, that's exactly it. So I do know that there's a dish that I'm going to prepare for the pitch-in.
Yeah. Well, you want to talk about it?
Sure, why not? It is a new quiche that I've just learned, and I'm very excited about it because, boy, is it good. I think it's time to get back to quiches anyway. I never left them. This quiche is cook some onions. I chop up a whole onion, not too fine, and saute that until it turns a little brown, or some of the books say pinkish brown or golden brown. Don't burn it. And then have chopped up one not too large zucchini and one yellow squash, and chop those up. You cut them in half and cut those in lines and chop those up so they're fine. And saute that. And then there could be added a half of a red pepper. Chop that up. And so then that's you're sauteing all of that mixture of squashes and onions and pepper, and then get that done and let it set to the side and cool. Then meanwhile, cook a blind cook a pie crust that would be in a fairly deep dish, because I like to make this one real thick, so a deep dish. And then what? Oh, yes. Then you get out the wet ingredients, which is two eggs. And I use a full cup of fat-free half and half. And let's see, two eggs, half and half. And here's the kicker. 3 tablespoons of pesto.
Hmm.
And you have my permission to buy the pesto if you don't want to make it by hand, because there happens to be an exceedingly good brand of pesto that is very, very, very rich. San Remo is the brand of that. They got it at the Art Mart, I know. I think it might be a couple other places in town. Or I like the pesto at Sam's, which is a larger amount, but San Remo comes in a small jar, and you take care of that. Mix all that up, and 1 tablespoon of cornstarch, which is kind of funny, but you pop that into the wet mixture, and a whole lot of cheese. By a whole lot, I mean, the recipe calls for a half a cup, and I put in probably a cup and a half, because I get carried away with some things like that. But the cheese is so good, and that wants to be a Gruyere. Mm-hmm. I have used Baby Swiss, and I haven't tried cheddar. I think that's a little too strong for this taste. And that's all mixed up, and everything is all put together. Then you drop the vegetables into it, and stir that up real quick, pour it in, and cook it at 350 for 25 minutes. It is good. As a matter of fact,
all right.
I have a piece of it left yet in the ice box. So that is one thing that I'm going to prepare, because that is easy. It's also cooked long before you have to go anywhere, and but you know. As I'm recalling what we talked about 30 years ago, it was my recommendation that you get an Oriental rug and take it outside and sit on it instead of just sitting on a beach blanket or whatever it is. Get a good Oriental rug and take it outside so that you feel like you're having a party. And also to have crystal and real silver. You're not going to lose the silver. No one's going to steal it or bend it or break it. I mean, the idea that you can't use that outside is sort of amusing to me, but everyone is afraid to scratch this or that. Well, you use it. And that makes a good celebration. And the idea of sitting around on an Oriental rug with crystal and silver always amuses me. I've done it several times. But I do remember that was one of the suggestions that sort of came up then. And I would still do it.
Yeah. Use the good stuff every once in a while.
Use the good stuff. Enjoy it. Just enjoy it. And so that is my recommendation right now.
All right. Doyle Moore is here, usually here on the first Wednesday at 10, but it's a holiday this time around, and we won't be here. Well, we didn't want to go the entire month without seeing him, so we said, well, come in a couple of days early, and we'll talk about, as we are coming up to the 4th of July, and a lot of folks like to have that as an occasion for a picnic or a party. Tell us about your 4th of July, favorite 4th of July food, or maybe not just for the 4th of July, but favorite summer picnic kind of thing. What would you make?
What you'd use for a get-together of some sort, yeah.
333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. That one is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. While I'm at it here, I just do want to mention that through the very good, kind, hard work of a volunteer, we have now transcribed a lot of recipes from past programs, and they are on our website. This is something that we had really wanted to do for a long time, and the problem is it's kind of time-consuming.
It is indeed.
And we had someone who said, yeah, I will do that, and she has been working away at it now pretty steadily, and now if you go to our website, will.uiuc.edu, and then click on AM on Focus 580 and on links, then you will see recipes from Cooking with Doyle Moore on Focus 580. And there are a whole bunch of them here, beginning with the grilling vegetables, which was our last show. And then before that, food for Cinco de Mayo and eggplant and fish and chopped liver and holiday cookies and fruit cake and just on from there. And you should be able to find a couple things you might want to try out, recipes that some of them are ones that Doyle has brought in. Many of them are recipes that listeners phoned in and shared with us, which is always a lot of fun. So if you have a recipe to share, or you just like to say hi, or you have a question or a comment or whatever, you can give us a call. Again, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. We have a caller here from Downs, and let's talk with him. Line number 4 right here. Hello.
Hello. Doyle, I do something very similar to your quiche, only I put Swiss chard in it.
Oh, well, I can't eat that.
Oh.
Swiss chard and spinach are off of my list.
Bad.
However, I'm so happy you called. Remember last time we talked about the pizza crust?
Yes.
I have been doing nothing but make focaccia every other day.
Wonderful.
Oh, I just love it. It's so easy. It's amusing. It's instant. It's perfect. And then you can just sit and say, now what do I want today? And so far, no one has refused to eat it. So.
Oh, I just think it's wonderful.
And I make it only with the whole wheat. And I like that because, you see, I'm a Kansas boy by heart anyway, and white wheat comes from the very middle of Kansas.
Right.
And that's where they get it. So I laughed about that all for a month because you just told us this at the last show.
That's wonderful.
And I went right home and made it, and boy, is it good. I love it. So thank you.
Okay, well, maybe somebody else could add Swiss chard.
Okay.
I saute the stalks with the onion and I use just zucchini and then I just chop up the Swiss chard, throw it in at the end just to wilt it, and then put it in the crust with the liquid ingredients and
Now, do you put all the pesto in?
I do not do pesto.
I was really
I think that's a wonderful
I was surprised at it. I first wanted to say, no, that's not the way you use pesto. And I thought, well, why isn't it? It is a very a very enriched and 3 tablespoons of this San Remo is a lot. It is a lot, but it is so good. It just lifts you up a little bit. And then I think that I don't know what really and truly happens with that tablespoon of cornstarch, but it tends to be a little more together without being solid. You know, it doesn't lump up and become a real heavy solid. It's a very light, fluffy quiche that you cut.
And it probably makes it better to hold together taking it to a picnic, for instance.
Well, yes,
eating
indeed.
Out of hand.
That would do it. Well, that sounds good. Swiss chard. I've never really jumped up and down about that, except the people who do. I mean, they're very fond of it, and the taste is quite simple. I mean, it's not like spinach, and it's not like other greens. It's a totally different kind of. Now, do you take the ribs out of it?
I cut the ribs out, but then I saute them when I'm doing the onions.
Oh.
I just chop them up and because everybody's always telling you to use them for something else. And I,
you said, know, what else do you want?
They're going to turn to goo in my crisper, I know, before I think of something to use them.
Yeah.
And if I'm sauteing onions anyway, I just chop them up and saute them.
Do you use the fat-free half and half ever?
No. The recipe I use for this, actually, I'm thinking more about it. It just has milk in it.
Oh, milk, yes.
And it also has Gruyere cheese in it.
That is so hard to find, but I did find it. I keep finding it, but
you have difficulty finding it. That surprises me because it's quite readily available in Bloomington North.
It's more costly than I want it
to be.
It is expensive.
But if you use good flavorful cheese, you don't have to use very much.
Well, that's true. Except as I say, I get carried away. So I put in a cup. I said, you know, I think I could stand a little more. So I ground the rest of it up and put it on. I mean, I grated it and put the rest of it in because, well, it's just partly my attitude. If this is good enough, then twice as much is going to be better. I sometimes mess up recipes that way, except I always like them.
I heard a nationally known cookbook author once saying, nothing exceeds like excess.
Well, that's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Enjoy your focaccia.
Yes, thank you.
Right. Take it to your picnic.
I will, and that is so easy to remember how to make it. Oh, I may have written down the wrong proportions because I find that I can't use as much water.
Depends on what kind of flour you're using.
I guess that would be and the day. So, but yeah. Then there was always the preparation of add some extra wheat flour.
The whole wheat should absorb more water actually, but you know I like it very very soft. And so that may be.
Oh, okay. We didn't talk that way.
Yeah,
I make it a little bit stiffer.
Yeah, that probably is.
That's it. Well, that's so good. Thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome.
All right, thanks for the call. Well, now, if you're interested in what exactly here we're talking about, and if you have internet access, again, if you go to our website, go to the AM Focus 580, the links, go to the recipes. Last month, we were talking about grilling vegetables, mm-hmm. and somehow the subject of grilled pizza came up.
Yes.
And I don't know if I raised it, you raised it, somebody. This has been one of those things where people tire of me talking about things like this, where I keep saying, you know, I've always wanted to do X. And one of the things was grill pizza on the barbecue grill. And so we got talking about that. And this particular caller did call in because Doyle said that he'd like to make the dough from scratch, but that it takes a long time. And the caller calls in and says, ha, I can tell you how to do that in 30 minutes. And she gave the recipe, and it is on our website, that recipe, if you would like to try it out. So if you've always said, well, I'd like to try grilling pizza on the barbecue grill outside, you can do that. And because Doyle, she says it works. Doyle says it works.
So and then, of course, what I've done to sort of shorten all of it is to make a focaccia.
Which is sort of like, what really is the difference between focaccia and pizza?
Nothing.
All right, then.
I mean, nothing. It's the same dough, and it's in the long run, it's cooked the same way. Now, but it's the preparation. You know, you spread it out after you've let it rise for that 30 minutes. You spread it out flat on a pan,
mm-hmm.
and I use a half of a baking sheet because that fits my oven perfect. And then you take your fingers and poke not holes, but dimples in it. And then you want to dock it too if you don't want it to rise too much. But you put these dimples in and then pour olive oil and sort of smear that around so there's a nice covering of olive oil. And then you sit back and figure out what kind of what's the next thing you want to add. Last night I made fennel seeds and just a slight bit of salt.
Mm-hmm.
And that then settles in that and cooks up. So that's the most recent one. I did caraway seeds 2 days before that. So I've been looking for light things. And the only difference then is, well, go ahead and start putting vegetables on it, and you've got a pizza with vegetables and toppings. I did make one, and I put I found those chopped olives at Schnucks that are all chopped up and made into kind of – it's not a spread. It's not an Oliviade. It's nothing except a bunch of old chopped up olives. And I smeared that on top. And then I also kind of sprinkled a few dried sun-dried tomatoes. So they were, mm-hmm. and that's all it needed. No cheese or anything. That was just it. Oh no! And then I got a mozzarella, fresh mozzarella. I put some little pieces of that around. And other than that, it was the same focaccia that I had made the night before.
And are you doing this on the grill, or are you doing this in the
oven? No, I'm doing this in the oven.
I am doing this
in the oven. But what was interesting to me was that Paula Deen showed us how to do it on the grill. And you cook it for a few minutes on one side, then you flip it over, and then you dress it and then go ahead and finish the cooking.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I got to do that two-sided.
And so even the first night that I did that, I did do it in the pan, and then I flipped it over and then dressed the other side. But I quit doing that. I like the faster I can get it out and get it in my mouth, so I'm not taking a long time to do it.
Mm-hmm. I got to do that one of these days. See, in our house, we like to use the stone. The ceramic baking stone, and which means heating the oven up really hot for a
really
long time.
Hot.
And in the summertime, you really don't want to do that. That's why I kept thinking, well, see if I could figure out a way to do this outside. Take the cooking outside. I could have my pizza for the 4th of July.
Exactly.
And haven't gotten around to doing it.
Let's say you could put tomatoes and mozzarella cheese, and what's blue?
I'm not thinking there's anything blue. I'm thinking you could put pesto and say, well, that's the colors of the Italian flag, which is fine, which is, you know, maybe that's good. But that's not 4th of July. There aren't very many blue foods, really.
You don't think blueberries and tomatoes
no.
and mozzarella cheese. You know, it might work. Blueberries are mild. They wouldn't change the taste of something. And that sweet taste against the tomatoes might be kind of pleasant because I do like sweet tomatoes.
I like eggplant, maybe.
Well, yes, they're purple. They're purple.
That's sort of in the neighborhood.
Or you can think I'm going to work. I think
take some pepperoni and dye it blue.
Yeah. Nope.
No. Oh, okay.
Nope.
All right. Fine. We're at our midpoint here. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Save us from ourselves and give us a call. We're talking here about partying for the 4th of July. So it's sometimes on the show that it has a kind of a focus. We say, well, we want to talk about this particular thing. But this is one of those that's kind of wide open. So if you have a favorite dish, particularly if it was the kind of thing maybe that you could make and then you could take to a party, give us a call and tell us about it. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. The other thing, every time we talk about grilling, I always say, you know, we talked also last time about the natural charcoal, not the briquettes
right.
that we have to thank Mr. Kingsford for, but the actual
Mr.
And Mr. Ford.
I know.
Doing that with the actual chunks of wood that have been made into charcoal, and then tried to. That's another one of those things, because now I have noticed at the store where mostly we go to buy groceries, they are actually now have natural hardwood
lime yes.
charcoal.
Yes.
Which it seemed like for a long time, I don't know where you would have had to go to buy it. I didn't.
Chicago.
Didn't see it.
Well, that's what some friends around town here, they always go to Chicago.
You go buy
and get 20
several
pounds.
Bags yeah. in and bring
and
them back.
Bring them back.
Yeah.
And I was stunned when on one day, one going out and looking, I found two places that had the charcoal. And so I laughed. I mean, what are you saving driving 2.5 hours to buy some charcoal that you can now buy here in town?
Yeah. And I don't know what would be driving the interest in that, but obviously now we've gotten to the point where maybe they think that there's enough people who are interested in that so that they would so that your neighborhood grocery store would actually stock
yeah.
those
yeah.
things. So that's still on my list. We're going to get natural charcoal. We're going to grill pizza. Maybe by the next time you're here, I can report back to you.
Oh, well, that would be a good idea.
And tell you about how
That'd
these things.
That'd be a good summer thing to do.
It only takes me 10 or 20 years to, you know. This December, I finally made fruitcake. I'd only been talking about that for about a decade. So sooner or later, I'm going to get around to this. Well, tell me about something, you know, what else, what you talked about the quiche. Is there something else in particular that you is a good memory from some sort of 4th of July? When you were a kid, what did you and your family do on 4th of July?
Not as a childhood thing. And we lived in a whole lot of places. I mean, I moved every year, went to 13 schools in 12 years, so I was always in a new place. I don't recall. I think watermelon was the answer. Yes, indeed. Mm. We always had a watermelon on the 4th of July. And in pie tins, everyone baked pies, and everyone had quantities of pie tins. So you cut the watermelon and you serve it on a pie tin, not a plate, not a paper plate, not in your hands. Serve it on a pie tin, and learn to eat it that way. Still do. I did it the other day. I had to go out and buy some pie tins, but I did. I was able to serve watermelon on a pie tin about 2 weeks ago, and I laughed when I did it. That would have been a treat, and that would have been an afternoon treat, not at night. And it wasn't necessarily in those days. You didn't gather people from the neighborhood. You had family. So aunts and uncles and cousins would show up, and I never remember ever eating. I think I ate at one person's house, and I'm not sure if anyone ever came and ate at our house unless they were family. And if they were family, of course, as soon as they walk through the door, they're right there. But it wasn't a whole lot of celebration. So I think that we have an opportunity.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have somebody here to talk with. Let's do that. Champaign, it's line callers on line number one. Hello.
Hi, this is Suzanne Skaggs calling from Champaign.
Yes.
And I would like to say to you, Doyle, that I bet when you were young, there was no garlic in your food at the 4th of July.
We didn't even know what garlic was.
Exactly. And I would sort of like your comment on the column that was in the News Gazette recently about garlic becoming a center of debate, being as how I'm a non-garlic eater.
Well, yes.
And the premier of Italy is also a non-garlic eater.
Well, I don't know that I really have too much of a comment other than there are two situations, availability and tradition, and most of it has sort of leaked out from that, and I know that I know that you get very upset about the fact that every time you go someplace, can't they do it without garlic?
Well, it's very difficult to eat in restaurants anymore
because
they put garlic
in everything. That's what I mean. It's sort of leaked out away from that because there was a time when I didn't even know what garlic was.
That's what I figured.
And it was salt and pepper, and that's it, folks.
Right.
That was the only. In fact, I had to teach my mother what oregano was. She didn't know. She had no idea what oregano was. What on earth are they doing?
Yeah. Well, I was just curious to know your take on that situation.
Well, I would say that it's personal preference. It should be more of a guide rather than laboriously following a recipe that you may have found. You could leave it out. And in fact, I have a couple of recipes that I have just done recently that do not have garlic in them, including the quiche that I just mentioned.
Yes, I noticed that you didn't.
There is
garlic.
No garlic in it. Sorry about that.
That's good. Well, compliments to you.
Well, thank you. Happy 4th of July.
And the same.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Well, I suppose that I'm sure that there are people who don't like it. I mean, I like it myself. I think that it's good, although I suppose it'd be possible to put in too much in what you were doing. I think it's good flavor.
We'll have to get Roger Cooper and talk about 40 cloves of garlic chicken. That's his favorite. But 40 cloves of garlic baked and cooked with the chicken mellow down and get very, very soft and very mellow, and they aren't that hard-hitting flavor that you get. I think what I'll have to do is take it upon myself to find an area of the country that did not know what garlic was and find out what those traditional recipes are.
Mm-hmm.
Other than I know the German, Dutch, Scandinavian, Midwest didn't necessarily use that much garlic in early cooking. And I've even talked to some people in the Southwest, and they said that garlic wasn't that prevalent when they were growing up in, like, New Mexico and Wyoming.
Really?
And that garlic wasn't a necessity.
Hmm.
So and there are some people who indeed just don't even like it. So don't eat it.
All right. Well, you can always leave it out.
Yes, exactly.
We have somebody else to talk to you here. This is Jay Pierce, our program director, was hearing the conversation earlier about looking for the blue ingredient for the pizza to make your red vitamin. He says, naturally, you use mozzarella, tomatoes, and blue corn chips.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not sure about blue corn chips pizza, but, you know, if you like that, crunch them up and sprinkle them on top. Jason's at blueberries, and I'm thinking, blueberries on pizza? Come on.
Well.
Save them for your waffles, your 4th of July morning waffles. Put the blueberries on. Blueberries, strawberries, and whipped cream.
You know,
ice cream.
I think the mozzarella melted over the blue corn chips is going to be good. Or the blue corn chips on top of the mozzarella and soaked down. Good. Thank you.
Okay.
You made it work.
4th of July special at our restaurant, blue corn chip pizza.
Blue corn chip pizza with sun-dried tomatoes.
With sun-dried tomatoes. All right. Well, who knows? Let's go to talk with someone else here. Champagne and line number two. Hello.
What's the cheese that has the blue stuff in? Limburger or whatever it is?
Blue cheese.
Yeah, blue cheese.
Blue cheese, yes.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that would work.
Okay, blue cheese. Maybe Stilton, maybe.
actually, what happened is I just happened to tune in a little bit ago when you were talking about reminiscing. Ours was out on it was in Yorkville, which is it was a little small farm out there at that time. And all the family go out, but we had homemade ice cream.
Oh, ice cream would be it, wouldn't it?
And it was all by hand.
Yes.
If you recall.
And how old were you?
Oh, God, I don't remember. That was a long time.
Well, I mean, were you something like 8, 9, 10?
Yeah, and what happened is that, you know, you'd wait for hours, and, you know, people would change off. The older ones used to have to do the churn, you know.
Yes, but what I'm getting around to, did they ever let you sit on the top of the ice cream maker. You sat and you mashed the wet gunny sack and the salt and the ice. You know, little kids were allowed to do that. They sat on it while everyone else cranked.
Did you ever get to do that? No. What happened?
Oh, you missed it.
Well, no, we were being tormented by the older ones.
Oh.
The ones that were 15. You know, they had the fields, and I mean, it just action.
Oh yes.
But the favorite part of that one was that after all that work and all those people, you know, like one dip, that was it.
You
know? So discouraging, you know, when you think, you know, my comment is that, especially when I went through a phase of gaining weight, was that all of a sudden when you had your own money, you know, and it's the same way coming back with your parents, you could, I think it was called Prince Castle up there at that time, that you could get, if you were good kids, maybe you might get two dips, and mainly it was mostly one.
Wow.
But all of a sudden then, you know, when you had your own money and you're older, you could get as many dips as you want. But it wasn't quite like the homemade ice
cream. No, the homemade ice cream, that's true. But that was always such an elaborate...
Hours.
Yeah.
Hours.
Yeah.
You know, that was murderous.
And you had to break up the ice because you didn't get crushed ice. You had the chunk of ice.
Wasn't it sort of rock salt? Didn't you?
And then rock salt.
Right.
And that makes it... But you had to break it up in a gunny sack with the flat side of a axe. Flatten it with an axe.
My grandmother, my dad's side was German, so we made sure that was right. It was the Germans. You know?
Yes.
Okay.
That's good. Yes, I had sort of forgotten. We didn't do... I think that most of the ice cream making... No, we did have a maker at home, but... It was rare that we made it at home. It was, again, one of those things that you may have taken and done with aunts and uncles.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were a lot more people around. But, it took a long time.
Yeah.
Long time.
I know that I've been in attendance when ice cream was made that way. And I'm sure it would have been a time when I would have been old enough so that this was just something that was – sort of done for a lark, because you could go down to 31 flavors and buy the ice cream. It was just it was a historical recreation, you know, doing that with a hand crank. But yeah, with somebody had one of those deals that had a hand crank, and they made it that way. I don't remember whether the ice cream was any good or not.
Probably it was. You made it in one of two ways: either a custard, that then you're really chilling a custard, or sometimes it wouldn't ever set. Because there was too much cream, which had too much butter fat in it, and it wouldn't work.
Hmm. Of course, now you can go out and there are home machines for doing this that aren't terribly, terribly expensive.
No,
they work real well.
They freeze from the outside, well, in the same way, but then the mechanism scrapes that off and then sort of makes it into a slurry and a slush, and finally it's you can then put it into another container and put it into the freezer. And that works quite well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk with somebody else here. Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Am I one?
Yes.
Okay. it hasn't been that long ago that our family made homemade ice cream because we had a peach tree.
Oh, my.
And I don't believe that you can have a better thing to eat in the summer than... real ice cream made in a freezer the old-fashioned way with peaches. Right off the tree.
Yes, yeah, they would be, that would taste so good as compared to any other peach, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It just made absolutely scrumptious ice cream. And I also wanted to ask you, you said no flavorings but salt and pepper when you were young.
That's
How
right.
about sage for the turkey?
Well, that's for the turkey, or in my case, I had diphtheria, and they made a sage gargle for me, and that killed me for eating sausage for about 8 years. sage would have been rarely used, but yes,
really?
in dressings.
Okay.
For the most part, everything was just salt and pepper.
How about paprika?
Nope.
My mother was very sophisticated then. she had paprika.
We did use paprika. I encouraged the use of paprika to decorate the top of the deviled eggs.
Yeah,
and
right.
No one liked it.
Okay.
They all grumbled about it, and so I thought, well, I just tried to do something that I'd seen that was the way you were. No, paprika was not a part. I'll tell you what was more important. Well, there were no herbs. There was mace, ginger, cloves,
cinnamon.
Cloves, cinnamon, and allspice.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a box of what we would now call pickling, or what we did call pickling spices, which was whole allspice and whole bay and whole cinnamon. And let's see, what are the rest of them pickling spices?
Clove? And, mustard seed?
Mustard seed there were. There weren't cloves not in pickling spice.
Okay.
Seems to me there might have been black pepper and all of that.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was
But you didn't grind your own pepper.
No, did not. Did not do that. There were these boxes that I laugh when I listen to people on the Food Network saying, well, you know, these boxes have been hanging around for how long? Well, I think I remember the first box of cinnamon. Mother used cinnamon a lot, a whole lot. But other spices, I would think that they were the same boxes that I'd seen all my life. We're still there. But it was things for making cakes.
And
vanilla.
Yeah.
Yes, there's vanilla.
Cakes.
But still, for everyday eating, it would just be salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was it.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Let's go on to, we'll talk with somebody else in Urbana. This is line number two. Hello.
I went to a picnic recently with a bunch of Serbians, and they made a simple potato salad that was hot potatoes, fresh sliced onions, and oil and vinegar and salt and pepper. I think that was it. And it was
onions and potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, potatoes were cooked, but the onions were not.
Raw, yeah. Chopped. Chopped or sliced?
They were big pieces.
So they were
sliced, but also chopped.
it could have been sliced, so they were those big half moons.
Yeah, I can't remember whether they were full half moons.
Onions and potatoes, and then what was the dressing?
Just a vinaigrette.
Just vinaigrette, I see.
Yeah, it was very simple, but the potatoes were hot.
Oh, yes, and then they soak it up. They soak up the vinegar when they're hot.
Yeah, so you had hot potatoes, cool onions, and it was just very simple and quick, and it just, you know, and I'm accustomed to when you see potato salad at a gathering, it's slathered with mayonnaise. I tend to avoid it because it's so full of fat, but this is very flavorful, and I tried it using Yukon Gold potatoes. I wonder whether those colored potatoes have more vitamins in them. They certainly look pretty.
I don't know if they have more vitamins. I think that what we tend to look for are different textures of potatoes, and some are really suitable for frying, and some aren't, and some are suitable only for boiling, and then some are and for baking. And I think that we've sort of have made separations on technique rather than taste.
I once made something that had 40 cloves of garlic in it, and I was so sorry that I did. I was so uncomfortable.
Oh, dear.
It was a major gas factory deal.
I'll say.
And there was no warning on the recipe that this might occur.
What was it? Was it chicken or was it a beef?
Well, I don't know. It was so long ago, and I haven't ever tried it again.
I think just out of the romance of 40 cloves of garlic, it might well have been a chicken.
Could be. Well, it was a lot of cloves of garlic, whatever it was. for people who don't like or who are bothered by onions and garlic, I used to be bothered by French onion soup. I really liked it, but it would give me lots of gas as well.
Oh, my.
And it suddenly occurred to me one day that, you know, you can use lemon juice on your hands when you get
juice
on it, and it takes care of the odor.
Yes.
Well, I thought, well, if it works on the outside, maybe it will work on the inside. So now I routinely, when I make chili, for instance, and I put a lot of onions in it, I put some lemon juice in, and I haven't had a problem with gas at all.
Well, that's interesting. I think I need to tell some people that.
So I'm wondering whether people who object, who don't like garlic and onions, are bothered by that aspect, whether their digestive systems are particularly bothered by the gas.
Well, I don't know. Is that I know that the person who called in earlier just does not like the taste, and it's repulsive.
Mm.
And then doesn't care for the smell. So it may be more complex than just simple one thing or two.
Well, it's surprising to me. I guess some people can taste things that others can't.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. My hubby, for instance, doesn't like things in the cucumber melon family. Those are pretty benign, but he just won't eat them. But we'll eat lots of other things. I know somebody else who can't stand celery and can taste it even small amounts.
Oh, my.
Celery she doesn't like, and she doesn't like anise. And she says she's a super taster. There are things that she can taste that other people can't.
Oh, I see. Yes. Maybe so.
Well, I don't know what that means. I suppose it is a genetic sort of thing, maybe. Some of us have some extra little taste sensors that others don't.
Well, it is sensory, and it does spread into different areas of your activity. So it may be specific for some people. Yes.
Well, that's my contribution for the day. Have
a All right. Well, thanks a
thank
lot.
Thank you for the call. I do think that there may be some people who don't think they'd like garlic might just at one time, if they have a mind to, might try roasting it, as you suggested.
Oh, yeah.
Because
roast garlic softens it down,
yeah.
Both physically and moderates it till. Roasted garlic is now possible to get in jars. Roasted garlic.
Yeah, so you don't want to do that. You can take a whole head of garlic and slice a little bit of the head off and just
put a little oil in and put it in the oven.
And do that, but if you would rather not mess around with that,
then you squeeze them out of the.
Yes.
Squeeze them. Who was it that first introduced it? I'm trying to remember, so I can't remember who it was. But it was sort of a what? You know?
Mm-hmm.
What? And yet. Yeah, again, I know that is very much in certain traditions. So this is what I was explaining, is I think that Suzanne would like to have it called excessive use of garlic, is just a matter of learning something and then just deciding to put it in everything.
Yeah.
And, of course, all Emerald get is great, great waves of screaming and hollering when he says that he puts garlic. Yes.
This is relaxed. It'll kind of feed 40 people.
Yes.
Yes. I don't know what is that about?
I don't know.
You mentioned garlic and the whole audience goes, woo. Yeah.
I think that they've been cued in to do that. It's just being silly.
Well, in our sort of the joke is when we have dinner, if we think it's good, we eat it and say, well, that's pretty good if you happen to have been raised that way. And I guess, that goes back to that joke about Lake Wobegon. There's some kind of cafe where the sign says it's just like home if you have that way. And I think that's what's interesting, that I think probably for a lot of us as we have grown up and learned about other foods, is that we have gone beyond the way in which we was raised.
Indeed.
And now are eating things that we never, our parents didn't put down in front of us that when we were younger we might have said, turned up our noses at, but maybe you get a little braver when you get. Now I know there are some things that I won't eat. Everybody's entitled to have their food, things that they don't like. But I think we all have at least broadened ourselves at least a little bit and are willing to try things that were not on the table in the houses where we grew up.
Well, and that is very, very American. That idea of accepting new things and pushing it out a little bit farther, I don't find in some foreign countries foreign to America that they're doing traditional cooking, and that's just it. There's not a lot of invention, And in American cooking, everybody wants to know everything about everything. And with that break after World War II, when people came home and had tasted things in other countries, and then with Julia, you know, mm-hmm. early 60s, then all of a sudden it became fun to learn and to incorporate, and a lot of these things have just become, again, another kind of tradition. But American cooking, I think, is extraordinarily good.
Yeah. And then at some point that people discovered that there were actually styles of American cooking rather than, you know, getting really excited about cooking from someplace out of the United States.
Oh, yes, regional
then
cooking.
Then regionally, you know, the idea, oh, we get really jazzed about cooking of the New Orleans and Cajun cooking or other, you know, low country cooking or sea coast cooking because you have access to those kind of ingredients.
I think my greatest champion of regional cooking is a North Carolina sauce for barbecue, which is a vinegar sauce. And I find that really, really good. But that is specifically a North Carolina taste. And some people may do it. I think it's done a little bit in Indiana, but then you stay away from the sweet ketchup models. Although a lot of people use that, and a lot of people, you watch these barbecue cook-offs, and there's always a fuss about the sauce. But the sauces that I think are the rarest and the most delicious are those vinegar sauces.
Yeah, I think that was when I was a kid. My dad was from Kentucky, long, long time ago. We went there occasionally and visit, and they would go out for what they called barbecue.
Yes,
which was pit. Some kind of pit roasted meat.
Well, that's really barbecue.
And it didn't come with sauce on it. It was dry, and then they had a sauce on the side that you could have. And I'm thinking that it was, in fact, more of a kind of a vinegar sauce. It wasn't like the very tomato-y sauces think about.
Too rich.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess we're just going to have to stop because we've come to the end of the time. Recipes, again, go to our website, will.uiuc.edu. You can find recipes from past shows, including that one for grilled pizza. I want people to go out there and start grilling some pizza and try that out. And next time, will you be here in the month of August?
I think so. I'm not sure. I may be in Wyoming then.
Okay. Well, maybe he'll be here.
I'll know a little bit later whether I'll – I mean, you know, it's time for the big cowboy show in Cheyenne.
Oh, yeah. Stampede.
It's the first week in October.
It's the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, usually here on the first Wednesday. We're taking the holiday off, so he's here a little bit early. Maybe next month he'll be here. Maybe we'll do something else. I don't know. Thanks very much.
You bet.
The show is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, Buzz Cafe, Prairie Fire Glass, Any Frequency Music Store, all on the same street in downtown Monticello. The broadcast also made possible by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. That's it for us. Up next, it's the Afternoon Magazine. The host of the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. This afternoon, in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, our monthly look at diet and nutrition. This time out, we're going to talk with New York Times science writer Gina Colata about the science of weight loss. She is the author, most recently, of a book, Rethinking Thin, is the title, and she'll join us following the 1 o'clock news. Let's take a look now at commodity prices in Kansas City. July wheat 584.5 down 12. September 583.5 down 11 and